welcome to Donors Tips, the podcast that brings donors and fundraisers closer. My name is Emilie Compini, and I'm the founder of EC Consulting based in Geneva, which offers expertise to nonprofit organizations in fundraising, project creation, internal processes, and support to organizations wishing to settle in Geneva. I'm also co-director of the Mastering Fundraising Practices Executive Training Program at the Graduate Institute in Geneva, a lecturer in the CASDAS in Strategic Philanthropy at the University of Geneva, and a fundraising trainer and coach for the Isango Collective in Lausanne and Cirque Impacts based in Dakar. Each month, I interview Swiss and international institutional donors so that they can share with you key information and tips for successful fundraising. Happy listening! Have you ever heard of the Gini Index or Gini Coefficient? If you haven't, the Gini Index is a synthetic indicator of the level of inequality for a given variable and population. It varies between 0, meaning perfect equality, and 1, meaning extreme inequality. Between 0 and 1, the higher the Gini Index, the greater the inequality. Inequalities measured in that way can relate to variables such as income, salaries, standard of living, and so on. According to the World Bank, for economic inequality, the top 5 countries are South Africa, Namibia, Suriname, Zambia, and Sao Tome and Principe. My invitee today, the Julius Baer Foundation, decided to focus its work on wealth and education inequalities with interventions in countries with the highest Gini index. As they define it, wealth inequality is the unequal distribution of assets among people and organizations. It encompasses not only the lack of financial resources, but also the lack of social capital, which allows an individual to access the networks and opportunities necessary to live a dignified life. Wealth inequality is indeed one of the most significant challenges of modern times. It can lead to unequal societies, social instability, violence, unrest, and further societal problems that affect the world at large. To discuss this very complex topic, I'm happy to interview Laura Hemrika, Chief Executive Officer of the Julius Baer Foundation. Hi, Laura, and welcome to Donors Tips.
Good morning, Emily. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you, and I'm looking forward to discussing this very complex topic with you. But let's start with a question to set a little bit the background about the Julius Baer Foundation. Could you please tell us about the Julius Baer Foundation, like its creation, its mission, and what you're doing?
You know, the Julius Baer Foundation is actually one of the oldest corporate foundations in Switzerland. It was founded already back in 1965 by Walter Baer, very much an extension of the Baer family's own philanthropic tradition. And you know, the foundation, like many foundations, has evolved over time when it comes to its vision and mission and the topics it seeks to tackle. But currently, where we're focused is very much on delivering on a vision that is a future where the disadvantaged and the privileged work together to create opportunities and share in a more equitable world. So what that means when it comes to our mission is that we're committing to reducing inequalities of wealth, of education and opportunity, and that our projects bring together the privileged and the disadvantaged when it comes to finding and implementing those solutions. So we're both commit to active cooperation based on mutual respect and trust. And so that's really our USP, especially as the foundation that's associated with a global wealth manager, which is what Julius Baer is, where we're in a very unique position to be able to work directly with those who are in a situation of privilege, that is one of financial resources, but also one of influence and impact and power in society, in communities, and in the economy.
Yeah, it could not be more relevant that if we want to tackle wealth inequalities, that we can't just target a group of people, but we have to work with everyone to make sure that that what you're doing on wealth inequalities actually has an impact.
Absolutely, because of course, we want to use our philanthropic money to build sustainable solutions, things that really hold water when it comes to their long-term implementation in the communities where there is a situation of inequality or disadvantage at play. And for that, we need to work very closely with those who are closest to the situation itself, who are living this on a daily basis, who are in the community, who know the community, who are working on site. And for us, we're then able to be that connector to those who are keen to help, keen to make a difference, and keen to overcome some of that inequality.
Yeah, and this is a very important role indeed. You have mentioned you're working both on wealth inequality and education inequality. So could you tell us how you approach these two topics more specifically? Because we mentioned this before, this is a huge and complex one, complex topic. So it would be very interesting to learn more about how you are tackling it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, wealth inequality, just the topic alone, is such a big topic. It's you could either see it as being very abstract, or it's just very complex. It's hard to find projects that are just focused on wealth inequality in and of itself, because wealth inequality is actually the result of a number of drivers. It may be related to race, it may be related to gender. There's inequality in access to education, inequality in access to housing, to institutions, you name it. And so for us, it's really important to try to unpack this topic of wealth inequality and look at what those different drivers are. And so that you'll see that in the projects that we fund, some of our projects are more focused on housing, some of them are more focused on income generation, some are more focused on farming and agriculture, all of which in the end tie back to wealth inequality. And so that's on the wealth inequality side. One of the topics very closely linked to wealth inequality, and it's a bit of a chicken and egg thing, is education inequality. And there too, you know, we're looking at all the different aspects that influence education inequality. And education inequality is different to access to education, for instance. So our work in education inequality goes beyond trying to make sure that there are enough schools or enough ways, enough quality of education, enough kids who are learning to read or write. But we're also looking at, well, what is it about education that makes it equal or unequal? And that is more than the content. It's a lot of the slightly more difficult things to quantify in education. It's network, it's social competence, it's not as, it's what you know, but it's also who you know. It's understanding what your powers are in society, understanding what your rights and opportunities are, and making sure that you can live those to the fullest. So one example in one of our projects is with Crystal House in South Africa, where you know, some of our funding will go to supporting the school, which strives to make sure that children, regardless of their socioeconomic background, have access to quality education. But on top of it, some of the programs that we're funding there are very much focused on making sure that children from disadvantaged backgrounds are brought together with children from more advantaged backgrounds, so that both groups understand better what inequality means, what it looks like, how it plays itself out. And so that especially the kids who are maybe come from more disadvantaged background see themselves as equals to those who have come from more advantaged background, and that those who might come from more advantaged background get a better understanding of inequality in society that they may otherwise not know or experience as much. So just gives you an idea of how complex both of these topics can be.
Yes, indeed. And I know also, because when we prepared this this podcast, you mentioned that all of this learning that you're gathering from this approach that you have, both to wealth inequality and to education inequality, it's also something that you share with others so that they can benefit from this learning. Do you have perhaps a point to develop on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, each individual project has a lot of value in and of itself, of course, because in some way we're helping to support an organization like this school, or we're helping to improve the learning experience of children or income generation opportunities for young people, you name it. But there's so much value to be gained from sharing our experience from those projects, whether, you know, sometimes constructive learnings, as we call them, you know, things that have gone wrong, but also figuring out what works out well. You know, we see the value of our philanthropic money as money that can be used in more risk tolerant ways, right? To take a chance, to test, to try, to innovate new ideas and new solutions. But if we don't share some of that knowledge and that lived experience, then we're leaving some of the impact on the table, and that's a shame. So that's something that we're constantly trying to fine tune and work on to improve. And that includes, of course, communicating about some of those findings on our wealth inequality platform, an online platform and community, some of our podcasts, webinars, but also monitoring and evaluating our projects, and extracting those learnings, seeing where our projects can also benefit from other inputs, from other partners, and so forth.
Yes, indeed, you are talking about sharing what you're learning and with different stakeholders. And that actually leads to my next question around the fact that the foundation genuinely embodies the value of equality you're fighting for. So you were mentioning it a little bit before, but it really impacts your way of working with the different stakeholders you engage with. I would really be curious of learning more about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, as I mentioned, so, you know, we're realistic with our funding. We can have an impact on organizations and beneficiaries we work with, and that's in and of itself is fantastic. But we'd like to make sure that all the hard work that our partners are doing also gets further exposure, right? That way they don't remain individual wins, but rather wins that can flourish to even bigger wins and even more success, both for our partners and for the approaches that they have developed. So our ambition going forward also is really to be able to be an effective convener and connector, as well as an enabler of innovative new ideas, of maybe what might be perceived as risky approaches, and organizing and supporting organizations that are maybe smaller, maybe younger, or younger in their organizational age, in order to give them that boost to test and try new solutions. You know, we have this approach of trying to bring together the wealthy and the disadvantaged in our projects and in the solutions that they provide. So we have a portfolio of grants of projects where that is always part of the storyline, right? How do we create an effective connection? And especially because of where we are as a foundation associated with a wealth manager, how can we engage the wealthy that we know, that they may be clients of the bank, they may be other foundations. And we try very hard and put mechanisms in place to facilitate that as well. So for instance, we recently had one project and we're still engaged with this project, where several years ago we supported an organization in Namibia called Jojoba Oil, which is focused on developing really the agriculture process around jojoba, which is a seed and oil that can be sold into different supply chains around pharmaceuticals, around beauty products, and others. And so working with some of the low-income women on in the countryside, in working on farms, to support them in developing their small, their own businesses in this space. And this was something that we funded for several years and then shared with one of our clients who was interested in joining us in this project, in this solution, and is now keen to keep supporting the project even when our funding is coming to an end. So for us, that's a great example of success, of being able to, first of all, share our experience and our knowledge, provide that comfort to another funder who is keen to embark on their philanthropic journey with us, and that they are then so convinced and motivated by the project that they decide to continue to fund it as well. And so that's, you know, that's that makes us obviously very happy, because that's how a little bit of funding from our foundation is providing a long-term support and solution on a for a project. So we also try to leverage other parts of the bank, which might be of course, the knowledge and expertise of our experts, of our employees. So we recently also had some programs where our employees served as mentors to some of the students and young people who were benefiting from our partner organization in Brazil. And this was extremely successful for on both sides. The mentees were getting some of the know-how and knowledge that they and guidance that they were seeking, but our employees were also learned a lot in that process as well about themselves, about their mentees, about the realities of inequality, and also some further personal and professional skills around how do you coach, how do you guide, understanding who you're talking with, thinking what the perception might be from someone else, understanding someone else's context. So that's also something that we're keen to keep building on. So yeah, those are some of the ideas behind how we really try to live that bringing together of different stakeholders in our work.
And I have to say I'm truly a fan of this approach, because I see so many organizations, even small organizations, that are doing an amazing work, and they don't have sometimes just this, you know, this network or this connection that would allow them to go to the next stage of their idea. And I'm talking about organization, but in the end, it's we're talking about project and people and how it impacts people's lives and how it impacts the world as well at large. So
absolutely,
yeah. It's so I really like this approach, because that's where we see that the when we pay attention to synergies, that's where we really maximize the impact as well. And most of the time, we're thinking about impact in terms of how the project is designed or how the money would be invested for philanthropic actors, for instance. But we don't think, you know, about impact in terms of synergies and, you know, how we can create impact with synergies. And that's why what I really like about this this approach.
Yeah, thank you. No, thanks very much. That's, I mean, and it also reflects in how we try to be conscious of inequality and how we manage our partnerships as well. Inevitably, with the best of intentions, or despite the best of intentions, there's always going to be a particular power dynamic between one organization that has the money and that's giving it to another, right? The donor grantee relationship can be fraught with inequality. And that's very much something that we try to be conscious of in our work. And so when we select partners and projects to fund, we start early on, but with a clear message of, you know, we want to fund organizations. We commit, first of all, to at least 3 years, and then most often another 3 years on top of that. And we also engage in assessment of how the project is working, but I think that's an unfair word, because that again gives you the sense that someone is evaluating someone else, and we're very clear that we select who's going to be assessing the project with the partner. We want to share those learnings. We are keen that those learnings are not only helpful for us from a project management and outcome measurement perspective, but also that they are helpful to our partner. As we mentioned, we try to help as much as possible in making it making a project sustainable in the long run, or able to attract further funding as well. When we develop the actual project, you know, we ask to organizations to put in a very short proposal of just a couple of pages on the idea, and only once we feel that idea is something we're likely to be able to fund do we ask for a much longer proposal, so as to not waste anyone's time with very long proposal writing if it's not going to go anywhere, especially smaller and younger organizations don't have such developed fundraising functions, and every moment they spend applying for funding is also a cost in time, if you will, taking away from doing the work that they're trying to do. And by trying to be focused on either younger or smaller organizations, new ideas, or working with more established partners, but bringing in the topic of wealth inequality where that was not there before, we want to hopefully bring in new actors into this space of wealth inequality and develop as many diverse approaches as possible, or at least test as many diverse approaches as possible to see what sticks. And of course, doing our best to listen to our partners' needs, not just in what do they need for the project to succeed, but also in the relationship with us, what works, what doesn't work.
It's very interesting to see how you already implement this concept, or you've talked about that, like the donor-grantee relationship and the power dynamic, or even what we now call trust-based philanthropy. It's very interesting to see that, you know, concretely how you are implementing this concepts. And it's true that we always talk about monitoring and evaluation, but we always, most of the time, we forget that there is learning afterwards, like monitoring.
Exactly.
So it's good to see that that this is not forgotten. And the point of learning is really to share with the wider community, whether these are nonprofit organizations or other philanthropic actors. I know even in the philanthropic sector that there is organizations of people are eager to learn from each other and learn of the best practices of each person, each organization. So it's I think it's creating a very positive dynamic in the whole ecosystem, which is also what you're trying to do in the field working on this inequality.
Yes, and we're by no means perfect. It's something where we also have to constantly keep ourselves in check, and I'm sure we could do it even more than we do. And to always ask ourselves and ask our partners what works, and are we thoughtful enough about the position of the other in this dynamic, and are we being flexible enough in our hopes and expectations around that. So as you said, trust-based philanthropy, it's a very popular word right now, but everyone's, I think, also still trying to figure out how to do that best. So.
Yeah, I guess it's a learning path for everyone, but it's
absolutely, yes.
It's probably the right time more than ever to question ourselves in you know, in all sectors,
yeah.
and see how we're doing things and how we should
exactly things. Yeah.
Thank you, Laura, for this input. My last question is a tip question. So what would you recommend to nonprofits working on inequalities or topic in playing an inequality angle? Because as you have very rightly mentioned at the beginning, it's not a topic in itself. It's very transversal. So it could be around gender, around health, around race, around even climate, environment, and so on. So what should nonprofits pay attention to and focus on, according to you, if they want to at least also have, I don't know, an angle or an intervention around inequality?
Yeah, I think it starts like we tell so many philanthropists and people who are interested in getting involved in philanthropy in general, is to start by asking oneself, okay, what is it that my organization can bring to this challenge? What is it about my particular position in society and geographically, who am I connected to? What are the assets we have that put us in a, that make it logical, that makes sense for us to get involved in this topic? And from there to then think of, okay, well, what is the theory of change that we're embracing? What is it that we believe is going to be an outcome that that we're keen to drive for? And how are we then going to measure that, right? And before you can find the measurement, you need to think of what are the drivers of the change that you've just thought about in your theory of change. And so what are the drivers of change? And so then what are the measurements? What are the inputs, the outputs, the outcomes? Is it possible to measure impact or not? That's not a given. And unless you're in it for the long run, and it really also depends on the particular aspect that you're focused on. And then finally, especially for this, anything that's related to inequality, is paying attention to that last topic that we discussed, which is how is the relationship that we're engaging in? Is that an equal relationship? How do we make sure it stays equal when we're trying to design solutions and then implement those solutions? So yeah, so starting with, who are we and why us? Then what is the theory of change? What are the drivers of change? How do we measure this? And how do we make sure that we're maintaining and living equality in our own work?
Yeah, and this last point is also very important, because no matter the topic we are working on, you can always, and we should actually always, pay attention to an equal relationship. I mean, more and more often we hear that we are not using the world beneficiaries for projects or for grants and so on, which is a good start. But I think there are lots of things to be done in that way.
Absolutely, I could not agree with you more. It's an ongoing learning journey, I think, if we're being honest with ourselves, and that could be a little bit daunting at times. So we're also always trying to keep that in mind.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Laura. This was a very rich interview where I think we learned, at least I learned a lot about inequalities and how you're working on that topic. Also being like this convener and enabler of different synergies, of you know, allowing even smaller organizations to go to the next stage in their project when they have a great impact in their communities. This was all very rich learning, I think, both for philanthropic actors and for nonprofits. Perhaps the last point to mention, that you are also working both with Swiss organizations and also local grassroots organizations, whether they are large or small organizations. And you identify usually partners through a combination of calls for proposals and an open application on the website. So thank you so much, Laura, again, for your time. It was such a pleasure to have you and discuss this very important topic.
Thank you, Emily. Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
If you like this podcast, promote it by giving it 5 stars on your favorite listening platform. Share it on your social networks, and above all, subscribe so you don't miss any episode. For more information about my services, you can visit my website, ec-consulting.ch. See you soon!